Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Marty Moscawain has the day off today. Not quite 2 weeks ago, 34-year-old Pablo Avendano was on his bicycle in the Spring Garden section of Philadelphia, working as a courier for a food delivery service. He was riding in a bike lane when just before 8 in the evening, Avendano was struck and killed by an SUV. 4 days later, he was memorialized at the 14th annual Ride of Silence, which drew hundreds of cyclists to the steps of the Philadelphia Art Museum. Commuting through the city by bike has become a way of life for many. There are obvious health and environmental benefits, but sharing relatively narrow roads with cars, trucks, and buses can be high risk, even if bike lanes have been set aside. Experts say the creation of new protected lanes would help to save lives. There are 2.5 miles of enhanced bike lanes so far in Philadelphia, but efforts to create more are getting pushback from neighborhoods and city council. We'll get the latest on this story this hour, as well as insight on safety and equipment, and we'll find out how Philadelphia's Vision Zero program is doing. It seeks to eliminate all traffic deaths. Jim Saxa, reporter on transportation issues for Plan Philly, is with us in studio. Great to see you again, Jim.
Hey.
Sarah Clark Stewart is executive director of the Bicycle Coalition of Greater Philadelphia. Welcome back, Sarah.
Thank you. Good morning.
And Eric Guerra is assistant professor of city and regional planning at the University of Pennsylvania. Good to have you with us once again, Eric.
Thank you. Good morning.
And as always, here's the number to call in to join the conversation if you like, 888-477-9499. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times or send us an email at radiotimes@whyy.org. So, Jim, according to your reporting, 11 cyclists were killed in the last year or so, and this is across the Delaware Valley. In Philadelphia, as we just mentioned, Pablo Avendano died recently in Spring Garden, but there are also two more names we should bring into the conversation. 11-year-old Julian Angelucci, who was killed on his with his bike in South Philadelphia, I think not even a week ago, and in November, 24-year-old Emily Fredericks. Philadelphia does have about 200 miles of bike lanes, but advocates are saying creating more protected lanes will help to prevent injury and death. What makes a protected bike lane?
Yeah, before I answer that, I should be clear that 11 figure was before the 11-year-old died. So we're at 12 now in the last 12 months or so. What makes a protected bike lane is basically you put in some sort of barrier between the car lane and the bike lane. And that can be the most common one are these plastic delineator posts. They're just little plastic little post things with some reflectors on it.
How tall are they?
2 feet-ish, I guess. 3 maybe. You can also see things like a raised sidewalk sort of thing. So something that's between the curb and the street, a little bit raised up. You see those a lot in Europe and other sorts of things, almost like a quasi-rumble strip sort of thing. Just things that can physically separate and make the bike lane seem like it is more separate than just a little stripe of paint.
And have you found that within the bounds of protected lanes already in place, there have been fewer accidents?
Well, I mean, I think Eric and Sarah probably know the research on that better than I do. But yeah, protected bike lanes tend to, I think some of the studies that I've seen, the numbers range, but you see a reduction of anywhere between 20 and like 80%, I want to say. Mm-hmm. But I just said that on the radio. I was going to say, don't quote me on that. But
Sarah, what do you think?
Yes, there have been a lot of studies done over the past 5 years. With respect to protected bike lanes throughout the country, and they do show an increase in safety, not only for bicyclists, but for all the road users all together. When more bicyclists are on the road and when there are separated bike lanes or even painted bike lanes, they act like a traffic calming device. The addition of more cyclists and the addition of the separation of the separate facility helps cue to motorists to slow down a little bit and take more precautions as they pass through. So they have been shown through data and research to provide a lot of safety benefit to all road users.
Any negative for cyclists, Eric?
I think when you talk about specific infrastructure, there are always different aspects of types of infrastructure that could be considered more or less safe. So one of the aspects of protected bike lanes that sometimes people talk about is the intersections in particular, where depending on how it's set up, you could have a decrease in visibility. That said, I think that Sarah and Jim are right. Most of the studies out there show that these improve safety. They also tend to increase cycling. And we know that when we increase cycling, our cycling collision rates don't rise anywhere near the same level as the increase in cycling. So we actually see a pretty big decrease in cycling collision rates.
So overwhelmingly positive.
Positive, I would say, for sure.
Okay. So Mayor Kenney campaigned with a promise to create 30 miles of protected bike lanes by 2022. Where are we with this? Jim?
Yeah, I mean, you said it earlier.
We're at 2.5 right now.
We're at 2.5 now, and there are, well, actually, we might be a little bit beyond that because they just started work on a 9-month pilot on JFK Boulevard and Market Street to do parking protected bike lanes. And that's where you put the parking lane where cars park, one area, and then next to that, the bike lane, and then next to that, the sidewalk, right? So that. That will probably roughly get us up to 3.5. So we're still, less than a tenth of Mayor Kenney's promise.
But I'm confident that the mayor will get there. He made that commitment, and he has never backed off it. So the city has lots of plans in place. They've been telling us and telling the public that they are doing it deliberately to do the community outreach carefully. But I think 2019, a lot more protected bike lanes will start to see them. But we will be holding, the mayor to his word that he will be have those 30 miles installed, during his term. So
is it costly to put these into place?
Pardon me?
Is it costly?
There is cost. They have raised the money through grants to pay for these bike lanes. So it is not a cost to the city's general fund, by and large. There is some cost with the installation and to some where the city does it them using their own forces. There is a cost there, but it's largely been funded by grants and the safety benefits that come with it really outweigh the costs that are incurred.
I think it's important to say two things. One is that the cost is pretty marginal. It is just a minor cost increase over the cost of just repainting the road. But two, I mean, we tend to focus on the mayor because he made this promise, and that's sort of unfair in a way, I think, to the administration.
Where does city council play into this?
Exactly. Yeah. I think the real sort of sticking point here is that there are a lot of skeptics about the push for improved bicycle infrastructure on city council.
And this has to get through council.
So city council, after a couple bike lanes were installed in 2011, took back the power essentially to approve or disapprove of the creation of any new bike lanes. And so since then, well, not any new, I'm sorry. I should say that it's any bike lane that takes away another travel lane or a parking, which is most. So it's the ones that matter, right?
Yeah.
And so what we have here is a situation where you almost any street that you want to do anything on, you need to get city council approval. And city council listens to the local community groups in those areas. And these local community groups tend to be opposed to bike lanes. And it's for a couple reasons, but a lot of them are just homeowners and they like the convenience of being able to park in front of their house or even just stop temporarily in front of their house to unload and load their cars. And when you build a protected bike lane, that ability goes away.
Well, how, Eric, let's get you back into the conversation.
Sure.
How do you affect a compromise here? Because you're telling folks perhaps who have been in the city for a long time, who've lived there, saying, well, you've got to change this. This matter, which is of convenience to you, now has to go away so cyclists can get by. And if they don't ride a bicycle, then they might not be as amenable to change.
So one of the things that I guess I'll try and say before addressing that question is related to costs. And I just wanted to say that the costs can vary quite a bit. So when you are relying on grant money to put in new infrastructure in a street that you're not otherwise going to grind and overlay or reconstruct, it's a lot more expensive. So that's part of why it's really important to have a bicycle plan and a strategy in place so that every time you're grinding and overlaying a new road or, sorry, an existing road, or, you know, you have to reconstruct the road, you're considering safety improvements. And that really reduces the costs.
Mm-hmm.
As to people who don't bike, you know, I think a couple of things. Maybe the first thing I would say is that the safety benefits of bicycle lanes often translate to pedestrians in particular. And in general, people may not want to have fewer lanes on the street that they drive on, but most people actually want to have less traffic, less speed on the street where they live.
It just seems to me that if this is really going to get rolling, that there has to be some sort of compromise effected so that council is willing to get on board with it. And, you know, if you want more than 30 miles or, you know, if you really want this this to explode.
Well, one interesting thing Eric said is that, you know, talk about traffic. And a lot of people argue that these actually improve traffic, bike lanes, because, you know, you'll have more people switching to bikes and traffic will move more freely. But the perception, especially among council, and Daryl Clark has said this repeatedly, City Council President Daryl Clark, that, you know, these bike lanes are slowing traffic. They're causing traffic jams. And so there's at least a perception out there that bike lanes slow traffic. And if you are in Center City right now, you know, that is an area where there are so many lanes that are closed for construction and the roads are in kind of rough shape. Traffic has gotten it's gotten worse in the last couple of years. And, you know, there's just very little interest, I think, from a lot of city council members to allow more bike lanes at this time when they're hearing from their constituents, you know, forget bikes, I can't get to work on time. Mm.
So, Eric, just quickly before we get to the break, are we seeing more volume? Are we seeing more traffic, increasing number of cars and trucks coming into the city?
I think we are seeing...
Or is it stabilized?
I think we are seeing more traffic, but that really relates to population and job growth in specific corridors of the city.
There's no evidence that bike lanes are causing congestion. That is, I think, a false narrative. So the issue about the balance between council and the mayor about decisions regarding bike lanes is, I think, comes down to safety and who really should be making those kinds of transportation safety decisions. And I think that it's something that council and the mayor need to work out a better balance so that safety can be the predominant decision-making factor.
All right. More in just a moment on Radio Times. We're talking about bikes, bike lanes in Philadelphia, much more. And we're going to take your comments and calls in just a moment. This is Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan in today for Marty Moskowain. Philadelphians are demanding more protected bike lanes with barriers between cyclists and drivers. Still, others worry that they may interfere with traffic and make it too difficult for cars and delivery trucks to briefly double park. We're talking about that and kind of expanding the conversation to all things cycling as much as we can in the 40 minutes we have left. In studio with us, we've got Sarah Clark Stewart, Executive Director of the Bicycle Coalition of Greater Philadelphia, Eric Guerra, is Assistant Professor of City and Regional Planning at the University of Pennsylvania. Jim Saxa reports on transportation for WHYY's Plan Philly. And the number is 888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And we've got the comments coming in. Tweet from Elizabeth. I just started to commute to work via bike for the first time in my adult life, and it can be scary out there. Even when cyclists are allowed to take the entire lane, we get honked at. When there are bike lanes, cars, including police cars, park there, which defeats the purpose. So before the show, when I was chatting with everybody, everybody told me that, yes, they bike into work. Sarah, what's the experience like for you? Because you're a frequent commuter by bike.
Well, I do run into some of the same problems that Elizabeth experiences, it is something that I almost feel like when I get out there every day that I'm doing my part to help educate that driver that I do belong in the street, that I do have the right to take the entire lane, and that the driver who is parking in the bike lane needs to leave. So I would encourage Elizabeth to keep at it follow the rules of the road and be that ambassador, a sense of traffic safety. I think it's important not to let those kinds of incidents discourage you, and the more you do it, the stronger stronger you'll feel about it, and that helps keep more cyclists out there on the road, and that's what we are trying to, we are saying is we want to be encouraging more and more people to try bicycling and commuting like Elizabeth has.
When I'm on my bike, outside the city in the rural areas down near the Pinelands, there's just a lot of joy in cycling.
Absolutely.
I mean, you feel like a kid again. Although, when I'm driving in the city and I'm seeing folks on their bicycles, I'm not sure how much of that joy are you experiencing, if any, Eric?
Oh, it depends on the day. Some days it's a lot of joy. There are times when that's literally the only exercise I get in my life because I'm too busy, and it's really fun. There are other times, say, I bet this afternoon riding my bike home is not going to be too much fun because people are going to be leaving the city in a hurry and stressed, trying to go away for the weekend on vacation. And I'll actually probably adjust when I leave work in order to avoid kind of the crazier, angrier of the drivers. But I think urban cycling can be extremely fun. It's really easy. It's for many kind of origins to destinations, it's the fastest way to get around. So you pick up your bike, it's parked outside of where you're coming from, and you can park it right outside of where you're going. And you're basically never going to lose a quote-unquote race if you have a friend who's driving to the same place that you're biking to. You're almost always going to beat them unless you're going deep out into Northeast Philadelphia.
So Jim, when you're on your bike and you encounter some of the stresses that Elizabeth talked about, what is your advice? How do you deal with that?
Yeah.
Do you stay safe?
I dream of being elected tyrant one day, and then I would ban horns because I hate them so much. But, there are different strategies. I mean, one is you definitely want to go with the roads that have a bike lane, even when people park in it, which is maddening. The amount of conflict on those roads tends to be way lower in my anecdotal experience. And then, I personally ride relatively aggressively. I ride pretty fast. I show up sweaty to a lot of places. But compared to my friends, just talking to my friends that bike a lot, I don't get honked at or yelled at nearly as much because I think people see that they're not being slowed in their car, and there's something about being in a car that elicits road rage. I get road rage when I drive. So
Let's get to an email from Robert who says, distracted, aggressive, and careless drivers pose a real hazard to bike riders. But many of my near misses, probably roughly half, have involved distracted, aggressive, or careless bike riders. I've seen riders blow through stop signs, blow through red lights, and come close to seriously injuring me and other cyclists. Not as bad as getting hit by an SUV, but dangerous nonetheless. Before we went on air, we were talking about educating people. And it's always nice to talk about an education campaign. But in reality, I was also talking about the fact that as a driver in the city, sometimes I don't know what the rules are. If I've got a cyclist next to me to the right, we're approaching a light, and that I didn't realize that cyclist has the right of way to go straight through the light if I want to make a right. I mean, there are all sorts of danger spots waiting out there, including, as our recent commenter said, other cyclists who don't know the rules.
So right. I think a couple, let's unpack that. So I think with better bicycle facilities, behavior is going to improve. So yes, you may see that it happens. I think all of us have experienced getting a close call with another bicyclist. With better bike lanes, with better bike signals at intersections, I really think that kind of behavior is going to change and improve. Number two, the state could do better in educating motorists about the rules of the road with bicyclists. And something we are seeking is for much better reflection of that in the driver's manual and in the driver's license test. And third is that education, public education campaign would help. But they are expensive. We have to be realistic about this. There's only so much, I think, money available for public education campaigns. It takes a lot of money to have a big, broad impact, across a city like Philadelphia. I would love for us to have, for the city to have a public education campaign, but it's got to go hand in hand with re-engineering the streets, improving the facilities, so that bicyclists understand that the street has been built for them as well, and with that comes better behavior.
Eric, where would bike lanes do best in Philadelphia? Because they're not in all sections of the city. Are some areas better suited for cyclists than others? And if so, where are they?
Certainly. The first thing that I would say is the best place to put a bike lane is where you have a lot of cyclists who want to use a bike lane. I have a study with some colleagues in epidemiology from Penn where we looked at Philadelphia and specifically cyclist safety. And we found that putting bike lanes into areas that had high volumes of traffic, that had a number of kind of a straight arterial, so things like Broad Street, Chestnut Street, these are the areas where putting in a cycling lane reduces collisions the most. But collisions are only just one part of why you might or might not want to put a bike lane into an area.
Mm. Let's talk about expense and people who would rather cycle because it saves on mass transit. And of course, it's much less expensive than driving. Where is the city installing bike lanes in less affluent neighborhoods, if at all?
So the city has, we have what, 200 miles of bike lanes, and there are a lot of them. In West Philly and in Northeast Philly and in Southwest Philly.
Because Indigo, the bike share program, is becoming enormously popular.
So Indigo is a different, probably a more complicated story because Indigo works as a bike sharing system and you need to have a concentration of potential users and a concentration of locations to make the dock-based system work. And because of that, it gets concentrated in Center City. And they try really hard, at least compared to a lot of the other cities, to make Indigo an equitable system. I believe something like a third of the docks are located in an area that is lower income.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, that being said, it hasn't really expanded beyond Greater Center City. And there are a lot of people that are, rightly, I think, upset by that. Now, that being said, the city is currently undergoing a process where they're going to look at the next iteration of bike share in Philadelphia. And
Dockless bikes?
They haven't made a decision yet. They're being a little cagey about it. But, almost... It would be shocking if they didn't go with a dockless system of some sort, which would allow a much broader geographic distribution of the bikes.
All right. Back to the phones we go. Did you want to say something?
I was just going to say, I think that the bike lanes that exist now were put in where they were easiest to put in because of the space was available. I think that the protected bike lanes that are planned are likely to be distributed throughout the city, not not centered only in Center City, of course. But what's really needed is a completed network, a seamless network so that you can ride wherever you need to go, largely on streets with high-quality facilities. And that's we're not there yet. Philadelphia is not there yet, and that's what it needs is between the trail system and protected bike lane system, we really need a high-quality system where anyone, no matter what age, would feel very comfortable riding on it and be able to get around Greater Center City and then in and out of the neighborhoods into Center City.
How far along are we?
I think that's a hard question to answer. Probably at least 10 years away, but I think that it's definitely doable, and it's something that we need to be focused on and as a target and get there.
Okay. Joe in West Reading, Pennsylvania, joins us now on Radio Times. Hello, Joe.
Hello. How are you?
We're well, thank you.
I am impressed with another city. Montreal is a very bike-friendly city. They have bike lanes that are separated from traffic and have their own traffic lights. So it allows you to make a right-hand turn or a left-hand turn safely, and the bike lanes don't interfere with, you know, vehicular traffic, and you know, it seems like it's very safety oriented.
So cyclists have their own traffic lights?
Yeah, they do.
Eric?
Yeah, we actually, there are a number of U.S. cities that have cycling traffic lights as well, particularly for a left turn across a arterial with a lot of lanes and a high volume of traffic, just to make, you know, making that left turn a lot easier. It's a pretty common, though aggressive, because it's, you know, you need a whole other light cycle and you need to put in the infrastructure treatment.
And you need the money.
Montreal also has snow plows for the bike lanes, which is pretty terrific. It's, you know, Philadelphia, it can be tough to bike in the winter.
It also snows there a lot more.
It does snow a lot more.
So, I mean, Jim, what do you think of this idea and something that might be a possibility for Philly? It sounds like a great safety measure.
Yeah, great safety measure. Cyclists would love it. I think there's...
What are the odds? I guess that's what I'm asking.
I think, the politics aren't there yet. I think there are a lot of people that need to be convinced still. And we have a system. We have a system of government that is really devolved. We don't have a strong mayor compared to some other cities. That isn't on Mayor Kenny. I mean, just the system. And so there are all these people in the streets department and the Office of Transportation Infrastructure Systems that really want to do these things. They geek out about it. But they need city council to move, and city council listens to the local groups. And so basically these local groups that tend to be older, they tend to be homeowners, and they're concentrated, which means, you know, cyclists live all over and they're traveling through a neighborhood. So they don't have nearly as much voice if the registered community organization is the one that really gets to make the decision. And it's just a political imbalance there that I don't see there being a quick resolution to anytime soon.
Let me get a Facebook comment in from Jonathan. He says, a comment from he's an occasional cyclist. He says he noticed a lot of other cyclists get immediately confrontational when a car driver does something stupid. Usually the biker will flip the finger or yell something offensive. In keeping with that bike ambassador theme, there are other ways to handle those type of interactions. And also I'd read in Philly.com recently that some residents, you know, the residents who are really leery of the bike lanes are concerned about cyclists who go really quickly and they speed through crosswalks, say, and there are elderly people who are crossing. How much of this do cyclists in general have to take on themselves to help improve the picture? You know, be good citizens to say, okay, we're really going to be mindful of our fellow travelers here in the city. Is that a relatively small problem among cyclists, or do you think, Sarah?
Well, I would say that it certainly would help, but it's really across the board. This is an issue that's not just only with cyclists.
Sure.
Motorists need to behave better too. There is a lot of issues with respect to motorists, you know, bullying pedestrians when they turn in a crosswalk and
I didn't mean to imply that either, but I mean, I think there is a perception sometimes it can be a little bit disorienting for somebody who is elderly and who sees somebody
absolutely.
Kind of
whipping
by.
Absolutely, and I so. would I think it's common sense to be, to be saying all bicycles should be, should recognize that pedestrians are the vulnerable user and that they should be, taking extra precaution when passing them or going through intersections. That's an obvious. But the civility kind of courtesy issue, I think, is across the board. And there tends to be a lot of focus on bicyclists because they are small in number and therefore they're potentially seen as the odd user on the street. I have to keep saying step back and let's realize that may be annoying, but it's not what's killing people. This is an annoying behavior, but it is not inherently extremely dangerous behavior. I don't like it any better than anyone else does, but let's try to put it in perspective of traffic safety overall. We have 100 people approximately a year who are being killed in traffic, and that's really where the focus needs to be on bringing down those numbers, and that is the point of a Vision Zero policy that the city is trying to pursue. And that has to do with distracted driving, speeding, and very unsafe behaviors, mostly but from motorists who are, dying at the rate of about, 40 to 60 a year, and pedestrians who are dying at a rate of about 30 a year.
And that dovetails us with this tweet from Ian, who says, cyclists make better drivers. I wish an hour of cycling in traffic were a requirement for one's driver's license to make more drivers more aware. So Vision Zero, where are we? What does that entail, and where are we with that?
I think instead of using the term Vision Zero, I'm just going to talk a little bit more about traffic safety, and then I can pass it off to Sarah, who can talk more specifically about Vision Zero in Philadelphia.
Got about 30 seconds before the break. Go ahead, Eric.
So I guess the first thing I would just say is that the United States has a pretty poor traffic safety record in general. We have about 10 plus fatalities per 100,000. That's three times higher than in the UK. It's also, on a per mile basis, we drive more, but it's still about twice the fatality rate there.
Why is that?
Among rich countries, we just we have much higher fatality rates. I'd say the primary reason is the way that we've structured and designed our cities. People drive much longer distances at much higher speeds, and when they interact with pedestrians, in particular motorcyclists, it's deadly.
All right, we're talking about bike lanes, cycling safety, traffic in the city of Philadelphia, much more. Give us a call at 888-477-9499. This is Radio Times. Stay with us. You are listening to Radio Times on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, joined by Jim Saxa, transportation reporter for WHYY's Plan Philly. Sarah Clark Stewart is executive director of the Bicycle Coalition of Greater Philadelphia. And Eric Guerra is assistant professor of city and regional planning at the University of Pennsylvania. And again, the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation is 888-477-9499. Tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Or send along an email at radiotimes@whyy.org. So the city of Philadelphia is considering moving some bike lanes to the left side of the street. And we're talking one-way streets here, right? What is the reasoning here? And I'm taking it this is probably coming following the death of Emily Fredericks.
Well, actually, the city already has a number of left-hand bike lanes.
Okay.
I think about 10 of them. And the protected bike lane that it put into on West Chestnut is on the left. And so what you were referring to is the proposal to switch the bike lane on Spruce and Pine from front to 22nd Street from the right to the left. In addition, they are going to be protecting the intersections. They're going to be putting in green paint and delineator posts to slow down the turning vehicle as it crosses the bike lane and the intersection. So it's part of a large plan to make that corridor safer, and the city is endeavoring to do that by this fall, and the city council interestingly enough, does have to approve it, not because of the bike lane, but because of the parking regulations. The curb parking has to change, and that therefore an ordinance is required.
Is this an adjustment for most cyclists who usually travel to the right with traffic?
I think cyclists will adjust immediately to it. Yeah. It's not that difficult to do.
But then is there an issue with then all of a sudden if you have to turn to the right, you've got to cross
it? It's really no different than what you have to do today if you're on the right and you have to go to the left. I think the I think that it's going to be welcomed, and the reason it's being done is because drivers have much greater visibility on their left because that's where they are in the car. Mm-hmm. So they'll be able to see the cyclist more easily than looking over through their car into to the right and trying to see the cyclist. So they have a much bigger blind spot on the right. So it's good transportation engineering to do this.
Before the show, we were talking about the three people who lost their lives in recent months in Philadelphia who were cyclists. It seems that all the vehicles were larger vehicles, either SUVs or a garbage truck. I'm just kind of pulling for stuff here. But, Eric, is there something to be said about larger vehicles and a lack of visibility when it comes to cyclists?
I'm not sure when it comes to cyclists for an SUV whether there is lower visibility. For a truck, there is definitely lower visibility and a right-hand hook. So where a cyclist gets hit by a truck taking a right turn, like the garbage truck, that's a commonly high injury collision, and it's really hard for a large truck driver to see a cyclist in those conditions when they're taking a right-hand turn. For an SUV, I think it probably depends on the make and model of the SUV, whether visibility is any better or worse. There are a lot of small sedans that have terrible visibility as well. I think another issue with SUVs, at least as they relate to cyclists and pedestrians, is when they block close to the intersection, they really reduce visibility for everyone. So it's really hard to see a pedestrian coming out to go across a crosswalk or another car coming in a four-way intersection or a cyclist coming. So that's one way that SUVs really impair vision and increase the probability of a collision. Most importantly, they're just larger vehicles. So even a car SUV collision, the probability of death is much higher. It's actually a car on car collision is lower than an SUV on SUV collision, but an SUV on car collision really increases the probability of death of the people in the car.
And your message to drivers is be mindful of the force of your vehicle as well.
I mean, you have to be. Cars are deadly. They're extremely powerful. They can be used as deadly weapons. And because people drive so much, we're so used to it, we forget that. And we kind of treat it like, oh, it's the same thing as, just cutting the corners a little on my other everyday tasks or being a little bit rude in terms of what I do. But it's actually being rude with something that has deadly force.
So we'll be trying to sprinkle in some safety measures for both drivers and cyclists for the rest of the hour. Another note to drivers, use your right hand to open the driver's side door. And I'm visualizing this here as we speak. So what does this do? I have to turn to do that.
It forces you to look behind yourself, and it really reduces another common cyclist collision, which is a dooring, where when a driver gets out of the car, they open their door, hit the cyclist, sometimes knock them into oncoming traffic. Mm. That's the other type of collision, by the way, that switching to a left-hand bike lane is good at reducing because you have many fewer passengers than you have drivers. There's almost always a driver getting out of a car. There's less likely to be, someone in the passenger side.
So a very important behavior issue is speeding. And speeding is a major factor, probably the most important factor in contributing to traffic fatalities in Philadelphia. And it's amazing how the difference of 10 miles as you're traveling as a motorist, the impact you could have when you collide with a pedestrian or a bicyclist. If you're going at 20, if you hit someone, that person has a 1 in 10 chance of being killed. If you're going 30, it goes up to 5. So, and if you are driving 40 miles an hour and you hit someone, that person only is likely to die, 9 out of 10 people who were hit by someone driving 40 will die. So speeding is incredibly important, and the difference between just a few miles per hour makes all the difference in the world, and will change your life as a motorist. Of course, it changes the life of the person who you hit. So
Being late is probably err on the side of being late to work.
Absolutely. And there are posted speed limits for a reason. In Philadelphia, most streets are posted at 25 miles per hour. Even roads like Kelly Drive and Martin Luther King and Lincoln Drive are posted at 35 miles per hour. Those roads are posted that way, but they are engineered to drive at 50 or 60 miles per hour. So reconciling the design of our streets to the speed of which is safe is incredibly important, and that's one of the huge challenges that the city has before it.
Let's get to Tristan in Haverford. You are live on Radio Times, Tristan. Hello.
Hi. So I bike a lot in the city of Philadelphia, and I was wondering if there's anything in the works to change the built environment of the city to make cyclists safer. Is the Reading Viaduct going to do anything to make people bike safer? Intersections, protected bike lanes. What's in the works?
Thanks, Tristan, for the call. Jim Saxon, we've been talking about protected bike lanes. Anything else?
Sarah would probably know better than I would about what's going on in terms of in the works, but we're slow moving on most of the bike lane infrastructure. One positive thing is the streets are being repaved at a higher level than they were. In recent years, the repaving budget got slashed during the recession, and now we're picking up. And so hopefully in another year or two, maybe three, we'll have a lot fewer potholes, which that's a very dangerous thing as a cyclist. You can really get messed up on those. But Sarah, in terms of other infrastructure, I don't know.
So there's going to be probably 28 miles of new protected bike lanes coming in, since only two exist now, and we expect at least 30 to be installed in the next couple of years. We have some new trails that are coming online fairly soon in the next, maybe 2 to 4 years. In particular, there's going to be starting the construction of, or design and construction of, a trail from Washington Avenue to Spring Garden. It'll be on the sidewalk, and a high quality trail that will really open up the Delaware Avenue and Columbus Boulevard to more bicycling, and help connect two important large arterials, Washington Avenue and Spring Garden, that would help enhance more commuting. I think the trails are important to keep an eye on. There's a fantastic gap that's going to be closed between around South Street Bridge, Christian Street, and University Avenue, with a new bridge-like structure that's going to close the gap of the Schuylkill River Trail. So those kinds of things will come along and help make the built environment much safer for bicyclists.
Eric Guerra, the concept of a viaduct?
The concept of a viaduct, like what is it, or what are my
or how might
it
relate to
it?
Can I jump in here? So the Reading Viaduct is an old structure of a rail structure that a very small portion of it is being converted into a park. It will not provide any safety measure for bicyclists, because bicyclists will not be allowed on it to be riding their bicycle. It is a pedestrian only park. Maybe one day in the future, but it's right at this point in time not really going to be a bicycle facility.
Okay. It's only a quarter mile.
To talk about one other aspect of the built environment that we haven't touched on, which is the positive space, if roads are the negative space. So concentrating more housing, more offices in the more central locations of the city leads to more commuting by transit, by foot, by bike, and an overall much, much safer safety record. So kind of sprawling cities have much higher fatality rates than dense, compact cities.
All right. I'd like to get to through some of the comments that we've got coming in. A tweet that we've got here: many motorists seem unaware that they have to be 4 feet away from a bicycle, 4 whole feet from the edge of the handlebar, to the car. And again, there's education. We're talking about it. I wonder if there shouldn't be an effort to put signs up around the city, just like different signs reminding, you know, near bike lanes, you know, the cyclist has the right of way here, 4 feet away from the handlebar, if that might help some of this. Also a tweet from Josh, driving near careless bikers always puts me at ease. Barriers would be good for their safety and my peace of mind. And then an email from Amanda who says, my friend's child has been hit by a cyclist twice while stepping off the bus. People do not know the rules when it comes to bikes passing vehicles, particularly buses, which have the right of way. And if a bicycle is always supposed to act like a car. So again, this cuts both ways. What are the rules for bicycles and cars? Are they fairly similar when it comes to traveling on the roadway?
Yes. Bicycles are considered vehicles by the state's vehicle code. So all rules that apply to motor vehicles do apply to bicycles. And so in some, you know, in some cases, I think you can argue not all rules make perfect sense for bicycles. But for the time being, that is the case. And therefore, the bicyclists have the rights that a motorist have, but also the responsibility.
Let's get back to safety. Safety equipment, you know, wearing a helmet, probably a must, but sometimes people choose not to. What is the reasoning here? What are your thoughts, Jim Saxa?
Well, I mean, I personally wear a helmet, but there's an argument that I've heard that some people say that, like, wearing a helmet makes it seem like you expect to be hit, and, you know, you don't have to wear a helmet when you're in a car. And really, like, in a lot of, you know, some European cities, no one wears helmets because cycling is so safe. But I personally believe, I mean, you should. I mean, by the same token, though, in Pennsylvania, you don't have to wear a helmet when you're riding a motorcycle, which I feel is downright suicidal. But
yeah. Keeping your bicycle in good shape. Eric Guerra, what do you do? What are the essential maintenance checks that you do?
Oh, gosh, what do I do?
Don't tell me you do nothing.
Of course I do. I mean, I regularly tune up my bike. I check the brakes, keep my chain oiled, do it more in the winter when I have to deal with salt. Yeah. I will, particularly now since Penn offers us an employee kind of tax forgiveness on bicycle purchases and maintenance, I now drop my bike off at the shop once a year for someone else to do the maintenance for me. I used to do it all myself. But I think most important thing, much more important than a helmet, is making sure that your bike is in good working order. Mm. I'd actually say in terms of helmets as well, piggybacking what Jim said, the trauma research is very clear that a bicycle helmet reduces the probability of specific types of injuries. The public health research is a little more mixed on it. Because you have a few different things going on. One is sometimes people have helmets on, ride a little more recklessly. Two, people drive a little more recklessly around people who have helmets on. And then it also reduces the number of cyclists on the road, which is kind of the inverse of the safety in numbers. If you have fewer people, you have higher collision rates for cyclists.
And some cyclists do ride all seasons. So when you ride in the wintertime, how do you prepare yourself for that?
For me, the most important things are a mask, gloves, and good socks. Mm-hmm. And then in terms
about snow and ice and tires and
it depends. You're better off riding with studded tires or a mountain bike. You probably should deflate your tires a little bit. I probably do not winterize my bike as much as most people do. But there are a number of things that you can do. A heavier bike is going to be better. A lot of people will have a separate winter bike. I keep two bikes just because whenever I get a flat, I really don't want to have to repair it immediately.
So, and considerations for riding at night, Sarah?
Well, lights are critical. They are also the law. So I urge everyone to put on a light on their bicycle. Frankly, I would prefer that bicycles be made with lights already installed as part of the bicycle. That I think is the safest thing, and that's what the Indigo bikes have. They have them on, so when you start pedaling, the light goes on immediately. So lights are critical, and that kind of visibility helps motorists see you, and that's what's really important.
Got about 10 seconds. Jim, where do we see Philly in 10 years with bike lanes?
I'm not nearly as sanguine as they are. I don't think there'll be much change.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. We're out of time. Jim Sachs, it was a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us once again.
Thank you.
Jim reports on transportation for Plan Philly. Sarah Clark Stewart, great to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. Sarah, I'm more optimistic. I think we will have better bike lanes.
I thought you
were.
Sarah's executive director of the Bicycle Coalition of Greater Philadelphia. Eric Guerra, our thanks to you as well.
Thank you very much. Also more optimistic, and mostly because I think the cycling rates are going to continue going up.
Okay. Eric, assistant professor of city and regional planning at the University of Pennsylvania. Our engineer, Adam Staniszewski. Our producers, Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Alex Stern. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Thanks for joining us.